भगवते वासुदेवाय नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 18, Description of Anasram Dharma. Text number 27. Yadita Atmani Jagan.
Yadita Atmani Jagan.
Manova Prana Samhatam.
Manova Prana Samhatam.
Sarvam Maye Titarkena.
Sarvam Maye Titarkena.
Satas Chaktvana Tatsmaret.
Satas Chaktvana Tatsmaret.
Yat.
Yat.
Which?
Etat.
This.
Atmani.
In the Supreme Lord. Jagat. Universe. Manaha. Of the mind. Vak.
Speech.
Prana. And life air. Samhatam. Formed. Sarvam. All.
Maya.
Material illusion. Iti.
Thus.
Tarkena. By logic. Svastaha. Fixed in the self. Tattva. Giving up. Na.
Never.
Tat. That.
Smaret.
One should remember. One should logically consider the universe, which is situated within the Lord, and one's own material body, which is composed of mind, speech, and life air, to be ultimately products of the Lord's illusory energy. Thus situated in the self, one should give up one's faith in these things and should never again make them the object of one's meditation. Purport: every conditioned soul considers the material world to be the object of his personal sense gratification, and therefore considers the material body to be his actual identity. The word chaktva indicates that one must give up one's false identification with the material world and the material body, since both are merely products of the illusory potency of the Lord. One should never again meditate on the material world and body as objects of sense gratification, but rather should become situated in Krishna consciousness. Looking at things from the eternal point of view, this world is simply illusory. The material energy of the Lord is devoid of consciousness, and thus cannot be the basis of actual happiness. The Supreme Lord himself is the only absolutely conscious entity. He is absolutely self-sufficient, standing alone as Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. Only Vishnu, and not the insignificant workings of material nature, can give us the actual perfection of life. Amagyana timirandasya gananjana salakaya chakshur unmilitam jena tasmaye sri gurave namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Tadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Girim Yakri Patamaham Bande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam. It would appear here that everybody is approaching life in an illogical fashion, because if we were to follow the instructions of the Srimad Bhagavatam, if we were to know of the instructions of the Bhagavatam, then everybody would be extremely renounced. But even those who hear, you know, sometimes there are those who hear, like it mentions in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there are those who look on the soul as amazing. There are those who hear of the soul as amazing. And there's another one. What's the third one? There are those who... I thought that was the fourth one. Anyway, there are those who hear of the soul and can't understand him at all. Don't understand. So here, One should logically consider the universe and one's own material body to be ultimately products of the Lord's illusory energy. But we don't. We don't. We look at the body as our most precious possession, and the material world as an opportunity for enjoyment. Even when we know that it brings us suffering and dissatisfaction, still we look for pleasure in the illusion of material existence. So that's, according to the Bhagavatam, illogical. Ill logic. Right? Bad logic. And even if we're instructed in the process of logic, still very difficult to see past the curtain of Maya that covers the reality of existence. But this is a, I guess this is a recommendation for the sannyasis, right? Or actually it's for the vanaprastas. Yeah, vanaprasta. So this is a particular approach, an analytical approach, which requires a certain amount of detachment, of a certain amount of removal from the day-to-day activities of ordinary existence. So it requires some stepping back and looking at things from a different perspective. In fact, you know, this is the Vedic process. When we've come to the human form of life, we're given a great opportunity. That opportunity is to inquire, what is the real purpose of existence? My desire is to pursue happiness. But whenever I pursue happiness in a material context, all I get is suffering. Right? My desire for happiness is permanent, it's constant. But the results of my efforts is always that I get some pleasure, but it's temporary. And it is always punctuated by some more suffering. This is a logical approach to life. Na sato vijate bhava, na bhavo vijate sataha. Of that which is permanent, there is no cessation. Of that which is temporary, there is no endurance. Na sat. And that's material existence. So one really has to detach oneself or take a different perspective on life in order to see this point of view. Therefore, the Vanaprastha is recommending step back from day-to-day existence and look at things in the proper perspective of the whole creation and the purpose of the creation. So in the human form of life, we get this opportunity. What is the purpose of existence? What am I doing here? When I was a little kid, I remember living in Elizabeth and walking out in the backyard when I was about 6 years old, 7 years old, and looking at the sky and seeing all the stars and thinking, wow, what is this? What am I doing here? How did I get here? What is my purpose? I don't know if that's normal or not, but it struck me as being something significant when you see the stars in the sky and everything moving around. And you know, my father would say, see that star there, that's Betelgeuse. Oh, how did he know that? You know, at a time when your dad knows everything and he's like a demigod, he can explain all the wonders of creation. course, I found out later on that he couldn't answer all of my questions, so I was a little disappointed. And especially with these kind of questions, you know, what is the real purpose of life? And why is it that I work so hard to be happy, but ultimately I end up being disappointed? That's logical, right? It's illogical to look at the material creation and think, yay, I can be successful here. Because it has that, you know, that set of sequences mentioned by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Jamma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha anudashanam. And this is recommended process of looking at things. Looking at the realities of material existence and seeing that it is not pleasant. My mother would say, oh, so pessimistic. So pessimistic, but it's reality. There is pleasure in the material world, but it's a reflection. It's a reflection of the real pleasure, like Prabhupada says. A mirage is a reflection of water. We can chase after the mirage thinking, yes, I'll be able to quench my thirst. But I don't know if you've ever seen a mirage on a, you know, out in the outback in the bush when you're driving along and there's like 10 kilometres between you and the mirage. You think, well, if we just get up to the, we just get up to it, then we'll be successful. But the more the closer you seem to get, the further away it seems to be. It keeps on moving, keeps on going off into the distance. You never actually get to it. But just because the pleasure that's experienced in the material world is illusory doesn't mean that there isn't some reality in that pleasure. That there is actual, real pleasure that is permanent and fully satisfying. That's what we're looking for. And Prabhupada explains, and of course Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, how the material world is a reflection of the spiritual realm. And the example is given in the 15th chapter of the tree, which is upside, inverted. The inverted tree, which is the reflection of the real tree in a body of water. It has the appearance and the characteristics of the real tree, but because it is simply a reflection, then it lacks the reality of the original, of the real, of the reality. Just like, you know, when you look in a mirror, yeah, everything looks, there's depth and presence, everything looks real, but there's, you know, try to have a relationship with the mirror, right? Just right? You can't actually enter into it. You can't. It looks real, but actually it's just a reflection. And that's its allurement, if you like. That's the allurement of the material energy. It looks as if it has substance. It looks as if it has promise. But it is simply a upside down inversion, if you like, of the reality, of the original. So one has to look at these things, recommended here in the Bhagavatam, one has to look at these things. For the renunciates, they have to look at these things with an objective point of view. There has to be some detachment. I was listening to a lecture Prabhupada was giving on the nectar devotion the other day. He was making the point that in Vedic culture there are two items that are valued. One is knowledge. You know, knowledge is the means by which we can destroy avidya or ignorance, and our behaviors in material existence are stemming from this avidya or ignorance, this misunderstanding, this misidentification, as is mentioned here, this misidentification, thinking the body is the self. But that's ignorance. So in Vedic culture, knowledge is highly valued, highly prized possession. And another characteristic or quality is renunciation or detachment, which has to be cultivated. It stems from real knowledge. Or it can be an adjunct or a support to creating a proper understanding of things. But it's also highly valued. It's detachment, removing oneself from the affairs of material existence and placing oneself in a position where one can cultivate these two items. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that automatically knowledge and renunciation will come about as a result of one's performance of devotional service. They don't have to be cultivated independently. And usually knowledge and renunciation are a measure of a person's advancement, certainly in the process of bhakti yoga. Although cultivating them alone doesn't necessarily mean advancement in bhakti, but if one is making progress in devotional service, then automatically knowledge and renunciation will manifest in the person's character. They'll automatically come out. So in the process of bhakti, devotional service, then we cultivate knowledge and renunciation in fairly simple ways. It's not very complicated in order to do this, to detach oneself or to understand, to have a proper understanding of things, to cultivate this proper perspective. It's not very difficult to do. And it's contained pretty much in the very basic activities of devotional service that we perform every day. We cultivate knowledge, not just jnana, but knowledge of bhakti by hearing from the devotees. Especially for us, by studying the Srimad Bhagavatam. Nashta prayeshava badresho nitya bhagavata sevaya. This is the nitya seva to the Bhagavat. Regularly hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's described in the Bhagavatam how this illusion or ignorance, what is it? Srimbatam sva kata krishna punya shravana kirtana vidyantastohiya badrani vidunoti suritsatam. The messages of the Bhagavatam are very attractive for the devotees. They relish hearing them. They look forward to hearing the messages of the Bhagavatam. And those messages have great potency, especially when they're heard and discussed in the association of the devotees mentioned in the Bhagavatam. Satam prasangam mama virya samvido. Krishna says that the discussion of topics about myself and about spiritual subject matter has my potency. Mama virya means my shakti, my power. Vira means like strength. We have the English word virile, which means strong. Vira in Sanskrit is synonymous. So this is our method of cultivating knowledge. It's one of the reasons why Srila Prabhupada went to great lengths to translate so many books. As he said here in Melbourne, you know, my books are not for selling, my books are for reading. And this is our methodology for cultivating knowledge. It's very simple, very straightforward. Hearing the Bhagavatam, discussing the Bhagavatam, reading the Bhagavad Gita, hearing the Bhagavad Gita, discussing the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada said four basic books. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Nectar of Devotion, and Chaitanya Charitamrita. He says if we just study those books and know them inside out, then one's guaranteed to be Krishna conscious. Then one will see with this perspective. One will see the illogic of material existence through the eyes of the Shastra and through the realizations of the previous Acharyas, Prabhupada's purports. You know, when we read the purports, then basically we're associating with Srila Prabhupada. And by associating with Prabhupada, we see things from his perspective, from the perspective of a Mahabhagavat. When the Mahabhagavat, Prabhupada was explaining the other day in this lecture series, he was saying when a Mahabhagavat sees the material energy, he doesn't see the material energy, he sees Krishna. And there's an example that Prabhupada gives. He says, just like a parent, when they see their children's shoes, then they automatically think of their child. Or just, you know, when you walk in the temple and you want to think, you want to know who's here, you look at the shoes. And then when you see the shoes, you go, ah. So-and-so's here. You immediately think of the person. So when a Mahabhagavat looks at the material energy, he doesn't see the material energy, but he sees Krishna behind it. He sees the connection with Gauri. She sees the connection. And he understands that then, because it's Krishna's, then it should be used for Krishna. Actually, Prabhupada gives a nice example. He says, he sees a young girl, and he thinks, oh, she's a gopi. She's for Krishna's pleasure, not for my pleasure. Interesting example that Prabhupada used in this context. So then let me serve that devotee. Whereas, you know, from the material perspective, we see, you know, a young man, or even an old man, sees a young girl and he thinks, whoa, she's not bad. So he's thinking, my enjoyment, my pleasure. But from the perspective of a devotee, Mahabhagavat especially, they see everything connected to Krishna. So that's why Prabhupada translated so many books and gave his purports, so that we could get the association of a Mahabhagavat, and by that association be able to see from the same perspective. And in this way cultivate knowledge. And then as a result of the knowledge, feed the sense of detachment, or shall we say, keeping a respectful distance from the mentality and the desire to enjoy the material energy for oneself and not see the connection to Krishna. The devotee always tries to see the connection with Krishna and always tries to utilize Krishna's energy in Krishna's service. That's what it's meant for. So the hearing and chanting process is essential or fundamental for this cultivation of knowledge. And for detachment, we have some simple processes for cultivating detachment. In the beginning, basic rules for what we call regulated principles. These are like the railway tracks that keep us on the straight and narrow. Right? The process of devotional service begins with vaidhi, sadhana, bhakti. In the nectar of devotion, or in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami describes the three stages of devotional service, the three stages of devotion. Vaidhi bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. Before we can get to prema bhakti, we have to get to bhava bhakti. Bhava bhakti means pure devotional service without any material contamination. But before we can get to that, we need to, because we're still somewhat affected and attached to the material conception of life, we have to follow bhakti in practice, which is the sadhana or vaidhi process. It's just the beginning. It's basically, you know, it's the beginning, baby steps, if you like. And just like Prabhupada gives the example that, you know, if you want to teach a child how to ride a bike, then you put those training wheels on the side, which makes sure that it doesn't fall over. So the rules and regulations of devotional service are pretty much like those the training wheels. They keep you upright. So the basic rules and regulations of don't do this, don't do that. No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit, and others, other activities. Asat sangatyagi vaishnavacha, the restriction of association. So we associate with people who are like-minded, interested in devotional service, and we avoid the association of materialistic people whose minds and intelligence are absorbed in trying to enjoy the material energy. We avoid that kind of association. So these are very simple activities of renunciation that are recommended for the aspiring transcendentalist. So you can get from the Vaidhi stage to the stage of Bhava. And in order to get to that stage, one has to go through the different stages of development in devotional service. What is it? Ado, Shraddha, Sangho, Ado, Shraddha, Sadhu, Sangha, Bhajana, Kriya, Anatta, Nivritti. So, first of all, one has some faith. One associates with the devotees, then in the association of the devotees, one follows the process of devotional service, bhajana kriya. Then in that stage, one then has to give up the bad habits, give up the unnecessary, unwanted association, and in that way, then one performs acts of renunciation. It's a bit. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains in the Chaitanya. It's explained by Krishnadas Kaviraj how Lord Chaitanya explains that a devotee is like a gardener, and he's trying to cultivate his devotional creeper. And in order to protect your devotional creeper, you have to build a fence around your garden. If you don't have a fence around your garden, then animals can come in and just, or anybody can come in and just wreck it. So this is a form of renunciation. And also, you know, the example is given of watering the devotional creeper, but at the same time weeds will come up, so we have to then pull out the weeds, get rid of the unwanted. This is anatta nivritti. Keep out unwanted association and then pull out the unwanted desires that exist within the heart. So this is renunciation. Necessary for a neophyte to make progress, or for a beginner to make progress. This is the Vaidhi stage. But then as one follows the process of devotional service, and especially focusing on the chanting of Hare Krishna, and this is the real key, if you like, by focusing on the chanting of Hare Krishna, one awakens a state of being or a state of consciousness that is already situated within our hearts, not something that, like Prabhupada says, it is not an artificial imposition to chant Hare Krishna. But actually, the chanting of Hare Krishna, if we're able to cultivate a proper understanding of devotional service, and if we're able to keep away material association, then as we chant Hare Krishna, then automatically a relish or a taste for chanting will develop spontaneously. It will automatically come about. It doesn't have to be forced. Of course, you know, certainly in my experience, you know, dudaivam idrisham ihajani nanuraga Unfortunately, you know, we're so materially contaminated that we don't have any attraction for chanting Hare Krishna. But occasionally, you know, in the association, that this way, Sankirtan is so important, because in the association of other devotees, we somehow or other are able to share the exhilaration of devotional service through the chanting of Hare Krishna. But by regularly chanting, actually, Lord Chaitanya gave his disciples the chanting of Hare Krishna. So this is the most important activity. And one should chant Hare Krishna, counting a certain number of mantras every day. This is Lord Chaitanya's process that he gave to his disciples, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami. And you know, the books that Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami wrote were very much about this science of developing a taste for devotional service, or basically uncovering our original spiritual position, our original spiritual identity. Nitya Siddha Krishna Pran Sadhya Kabul Noi Shravanadi Sudha Chitte Karaye Udoy. The perfection, the Nitya Siddha, the eternal perfection of Krishna consciousness exists in everybody's heart. And it's reawakened by this hearing and chanting process. So for us, we cultivate knowledge, we develop detachment in the context of cultivating our attraction for and our taste for chanting Hare Krishna. This is our yajna. Not very difficult. This is our sacrifice. All we have to do in this lifetime is perfect this sacrifice of chanting Hare Krishna. Then we'll be able to see through the pale offerings of Maya. Unfortunately, we haven't got to that point yet. When Maya, you know, shows us something attractive, we think, whoa, that's far out, I want one of those. But if we're looking at things logically, as is recommended here, we wouldn't be attracted to the allurements of the material energy. We would understand that it's just a pale reflection, a perverted reflection of the original happiness or pleasure or variety of enjoyment that exists in the spiritual realm, but that actually is just an illusion. So for the aspiring transcendentalist in devotional service, one has to work. You know, there's a certain amount of effort that has to be put into this Vaidhi process in order to get to the Bhava Bhakti stage. There's pleasure, if you like, in the performance of Vaidhi Bhakti. But still, because we don't have a natural affection or a natural taste, we've still got the jaundice of avidya, as described by Rupa Goswami. We haven't got a taste for chanting Hare Krishna. It will come, but we're still in the, you know, somewhat diseased condition. So when we're chanting Hare Krishna, sometimes it's really, you know, it's like so hard. Although, you know, really, when you think about it, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, it's pretty easy. But then there's sometimes it's like, you know, just saying Hare, it's like it takes, you know, 3 years just to say Hare. And in the meantime, there's all these other things floating around inside your head. What about this? What about that? Boy, this chanting Hare Krishna is so hard. Who could imagine a greater torture than this? This is Duradaivam, very great misfortune. Because actually in the chanting of Hare Krishna, as described by Rupa Goswami, you know, if only I could have thousands of ears just to hear the sweetness of the holy name, and if I had thousands of tongues, I could relish the chanting. This is the mood of it. You know, when we're chanting Hare Krishna with enthusiasm and with taste, then we never want to stop. But if we're afflicted by this jaundice of ignorance, then we can't even, you know, it's almost impossible to start. So some effort is required in order to make progress. Rupa Goswami encourages enthusiasm, determination, patience. Even when the going gets tough, one has to be determined. But it's mentioned that the chanting of Hare Krishna is so potent that it can remove more obstacles than we can create for ourselves, basically. And one has to remain determined in the application of devotional service, in the practice and application of devotional service, in order to gradually move from the stage of being attracted to the material energy to the point of understanding the frailties and the weaknesses and the difficulties that come about as a result of being absorbed in material existence, and then becoming absorbed and relishing, if you like, the activities of devotional service. It takes some time, and it's a process. Even at times it may appear that one isn't making any progress, but still one has to be determined. And actually, we're making more progress than we could imagine. You know, it's just like when you're flying in an aeroplane 30,000 feet in the air, and you look down and you think, oh, they're going very fast. But, you know, if you hop out the aeroplane, you know, you'll find out how fast you're actually going and how high you have achieved. So similarly also for a debate, it's a little deceiving sometimes. We're all together in the transcendental boat of devotional service, and in relationship to each other, it doesn't look like we're travelling very fast. And in comparison to everybody else in the material world, we're speeding back home, back to Godhead. But it requires a bit of determination and a bit of patience. Okay, so I'll finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions, quickly? Yep. One comment and one question. Okay, we're counting.
You commented that Srila Prabhupada brought spiritual development by establishing Mahaprabhu's
temple. Yes.
So that's a great mercy. So much so that even the boys coming from school, they are coming and dancing here so nicely.
Yeah.
And really, there's a place where they can really.
Yeah. Did you see the school students yesterday? Huh? Yeah. And the question?
My question is, in spite of knowing all this skill, I am telling myself, I want to finish my rounds quickly. So can you help me some way so that I take at least 15 minutes in 2 rounds or 7.5 minutes?
That's okay, that's how long I take.
I'm taking 5 minutes,
but
it should be 7.5 minutes.
No, you can chant in 5 minutes, that's okay. If you want to spend more time chanting, just chant longer later, you know. Chant afterwards. Get to 16, then chant some more. Some people can chant quicker than others. 5 minutes is okay. If I'm exhausted if I try to chant around in 5 minutes. I can do it, but I've got to, you know, concentrate and, you know, don't waste any breath, and, you know, it's too hard for me. I was always envious of my friends who could chant rounds in 5 minutes, and how come he can chant rounds in 5 minutes? I got to chant them in 7.5 minutes. But I wouldn't worry about it too much. And if you think you're chanting not enough, then just chant some more.
I thought I hadn't got that taste for chanting.
No, you're chanting so nicely that you get through them in 5 minutes. We're so spaced out, it takes 7.5 minutes. We're thinking about all other things.
The traditional chakra of the heart, like Hare Krishna is described as being the smallest part of it, situated in the heart.
Yeah.
You know, so the Indian tradition is that there's a heart chakra.
There's so many chakras.
Yeah, so,
but Krishna's everywhere anyway. So, heart, head, toe. But specifically, he's present in the form of the Paramatma, in the form of the Super Soul, residing in the heart. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hridesh Arjuna Tishtati. So, that feature of Krishna is the Paramatma. Right? And he's directing the wanderings of everybody, facilitating their desires, giving them their reactions also to their past karmas. So that's all being directed by this Paramatma, the Super Soul. Chakras, I don't even know how many chakras there are. But Krishna doesn't seem to really put a lot of emphasis on chakras.
Suicide chakra.
Yeah, that's for chopping off demons' heads. Yeah. But as far as, you know, the yoga practice and so forth. The emphasis is in the Bhagavad Gita, the emphasis is not so much on the reception of knowledge from the Paramatma. And in fact, Krishna explains in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, if one wants to learn transcendental knowledge, then one does so through the Paramatma's agent, through the agency of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is the representative of the Paramatma. So the Paramatma manifests his presence in the form of the guru who gives instructions and guidance. This is the process that's actually emphasized by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. And I mentioned this many times. Prabhupada was once asked the devotees, you know, what's the most important verse in the Bhagavad Gita? And devotees would say, oh, Sarvadharmam Parityajamam Ekam Sharanam Braja. And, you know, quite verses like that. Prabhupada said, no. Most important verse in the Bhagavad Gita is Tadvidhi Pranipatena Pariprasnena Sevaya Upadeksh Yanti Te Gyanam Gyani Nastakvadashnaha. So, learn the process of devotional service from a guru. Because that's Krishna's representative. So that's how we do it. That's our system. Anything else? Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Bhaktavinoda Ki Jai.